sure.
Okay, so let's, okay, let's bring House Natural Resources to order. And LJ, if you could take roll call, please.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Vice Chair Gist.
Here.
Vice Chair Marler.
Here.
Representative Malone.
Here.
Representative Jay Hinkle.
Here.
Representative Perry.
Here.
Representative Miner.
Here.
Representative R. Knudsen.
Excused.
Representative Konauer.
Present.
Representative Vinton.
Excused.
Representative Carlin.
Excused.
Representative France.
Here.
Representative Fitzgerald.
Here.
Representative Weatherwax.
Excused.
Representative Walsh.
Here.
Chair Gunderson.
Here.
That is all, Mr. Chair.
Okay, so we have a quorum. We can do business. So everybody make sure you turn your cell phones off. Make sure you've signed in if you're going to give testimony. And the following bills are SB 55, SB 42, and SB 215. Do we have Senator Heinbaugh here?
I didn't see him.
Well, let's stand at ease until we get our senator here. Okay, let's bring House Natural Resources back to order. And Senator Heinbaugh, welcome. Would you like to open on your bill? We'll open the hearing on Senate Bill 55.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Steve Heinbaugh. I am represent Senate District 18, which is Weibo, Dawson, and Richland counties. And Sorry about being late. We were doing executive action, and some of them guys are long-winded. So anyway, Senate Bill 55 is a bill that requested by DEQ. It's the Senate Bill 55 will increase Montana's influence in regional and national mining policy. They'll do that through joining the Interstate Mining Compact Commission. It's a governmental organization with 26 member states. It's a critical time for Montana to engage as the federal government is seeking input and analyzing options to revise federal hard rock mining requirements. This could have significant impacts in Montana. The bill's a lot of pages, and the reason being is we have the 26 members, and we got everybody has the same the same criteria, so we have to go that route. Wyoming is one of the ones that's a full member, and it would like to encourage Montana to do that because we have similar mining interests in this country. And so there is a cost, but it'll be done by federal dollars that we get for mining reasons. I think it's a good bill. I think it's something we need to look at because this is what we call the treasure. We used to call anyway the treasure state, and I think it's important for us to understand that mining is important to the state. And I just have toured a few mines, and we've had a lot of trouble with regulations and different things. So I think it's an important bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Heinbaugh. Do we have any proponents in the House?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and committee members. For the record, my name is James Fair, last name spelled F-E-H-R. I'm the Deputy Director for the Department of Environmental Quality. I'm joined here today by Mining Bureau Chief Dan Walsh. He has a lot of experience working with IMCC for DEQ, and I also have Scott Graham, Abandoned Mined Lands Project Manager for DEQ. So DEQ supports Senate Bill 55. This is a bill to join the Interstate Mining Compact Commission, the IMCC. The IMCC is an organization currently comprised of 26 states that produce over 98% of the nation's coal, as well as many other important minerals. The purpose of the compact is to advance the protection of land, water, and other resources affected by mining through the encouragement of programs in each of the party states that will achieve comparable results. Because it's a compact, like the good senator mentioned, it's a bit lengthy, and we need to adopt it as written and approved by other states. So Montana is currently an associate member of the IMCC and has been for the past 3 years. States are offered associate membership through the IMCC with an understanding that they will pursue full membership within 5 years. So full membership is required to continue being part of the IMCC. Without full membership, we may no longer be able to be part of the IMCC. We may be asked, I guess, not to be part of it, or even as an associate member. With full membership, we become a voting member in the IMCC, which we are not today. Montana has realized great benefits from its associate membership. With its associate membership, Montana has been able to stay much better informed on national issues pertaining to mining. Montana has kept more apprised of national coal mining permit implementation interactions with the Office of Surface Mining, Reclamation and Enforcement. And also reclamation of abandoned coal mines. More recently, IMCC weighed in on other issues ranging from the proposed federal reform of hard rock mining laws to the dispersal of federal funds for mining-related issues to monitoring, commenting on the Federal Stream Act. In addition, IMCC was instrumental in reauthorization of the Montana Abandoned Mine Lands Program, AML program, for 13 more years with funding of $3.2 million per year. And the IMCC was also involved recently with, you know, helping with the federal bipartisan infrastructure law, which resulted in an additional $4.6 million for the program for Montana. The potential benefits of joining the IMCC as a full voting member for Montana include continued focused awareness of federal proposals regarding mining law implementation, an ongoing voice for Montana at the federal level for any proposed mining law changes, such as ongoing federal discussion on reform of hard rock mining laws, continued advocacy for additional funding to Montana for mining-related topics, and continued involvement for Montana with a network of similar states and agencies devoted to sustainable mining practices. Thank you very much, Senator Heinbaugh, for sponsoring this bill, and to the committee for your time today. Thank you also to Vice Chair Gist, who's agreed to carry the proposal on the floor should it pass this committee. We're available for questions, and we also have Mr. Tom Clark, Executive Director of the IMCC. He'll be online as a proponent via Zoom. So thank you, and I'm available for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Fear. Do we have any more proponents in the House?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Bill Snoddy, spelled S-N-O-D-D-Y. And I am here today as a proponent for Senate Bill 55. I retired from state government last September, and at that time I was a program manager for the Abandoned Mine Lands and Construction Services section of the DEQ. And Mr. Chairman, just as for the record, a side note, that is the best section in state government. Now, the Abandoned Mine Lands portion of my section is responsible for monitoring and repairing problems on over 3,000 abandoned coal mines in the state of Montana. In the 46 years that the AML program has existed, we have reclaimed dozens of major hard rock mines and dozens of abandoned coal mines, not to mention small subsidence issues that crop up. I've repaired six repeatedly in Weibo County myself. On October 1st, 2021, the funding mechanism for the Abandoned Mine Lands Program under Surface Mining Control and Reclamation Act was set to daylight, or sunset, pardon me. We worked with the member states of IMCC, worked together with IMCC on reauthorization. That was a long struggle. It took us years to get sponsors, to get a bill written and appropriate support from many groups. And that would not have happened without the direct contributions of Tom Clark and the members of IMCC. Additionally, as Deputy Director Farr mentioned, the IMCC has worked to help provide additional funding for abandoned mines to the tune of $71 million over the next 15 years to reclaim abandoned mines. That will include surface work. It will include community development work for communities impacted by historic mining, water treatment, and a number of other things. That also would not have happened without the direct support of IMCC. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I urge you to vote to pass on this bill. Without it, Montana will lose its ability to reclaim abandoned coal mines and leave many Montanans without any resource when they have problems not of their creating. Happy St. Patrick's Day, and thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Snoddy. Do we have any more proponents?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, John Bennion, that's J-O-N-B-E-N-N-I-O-N. I'm here on behalf of the Washington Companies. Happy St. Patrick's Day as well. One of the Washington Companies includes Montana Resources, which is a copper and molybdenum mine down in Butte. And you should have a letter eventually that was sent to the committee by myself in support of Senate Bill 55, but I wanted to show up in person and also say that everything that we've heard about it makes sense, that this is a very good collaborative group. I think where DEQ gets to sit at the table with a number of other states, compare notes, and speak with a more powerful voice when states can actually collaborate on this together. It also sounds like DEQ has been able to test drive this group, so to speak, for the last 3 years, and that it might be ready to jump on board and add Montana to the list of states. So we urge a due pass on Senate Bill 55.
Thank you, Mr. Bennion. Do we have any more proponents?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is, Peggy Trank, and I'm here on behalf of the Treasure State Resources Association. That's spelled T-R-E-N-K. We also rise in support of Senate Bill 55 and thank the sponsor for bringing the bill. We have both members both in the coal mining industry and the hard rock mining industries, both which are heavily regulated, and sort of this complex relationship with the state and the federal government in carrying out those regulations. This is a great forum, offers for collaboration, from learning from other states and sharing some of the innovative practices we've implemented. We think it's money well spent, and we urge a due pass on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Trink. And next proponent.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is John Sonju, S-O-N-J-U, here representing the Montana Mining Association. The association also wants to go on record to support SB 55. We think that this bill is important so Montana can have a voice on Washington, D.C. policy. Equally, it's important that the DEQ shares best practices and policy with other states and vice versa. So with that, we urge a due pass, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Sonju. And next proponent.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Daryl James, that's D-A-R-R-Y-L. James is the common spelling, and I come to you this afternoon representing Westmoreland Mining. They're the owners and operators of the Rosebud Mine at Colstrip. Also come in support of Senate Bill 55 for a couple of reasons. One, anytime an industry has an opportunity to create a forum where you can share ideas and experiences in a regulated industry to improve not only the best practices in that industry, but also the regulatory environment in which you operate, sounds like a great idea. I think DEQ's experience over the last number of years has given some weight to this, to say that it is a valuable organization it's worthwhile participating in. So we encourage your full support. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. James. And our next proponent.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is George Harris, H-A-R-R-I-S. I'm the executive director of the Montana Coal Council, and I represent the coal industry and the suppliers of the coal industry in Montana. And we, too, stand in support of SB 55. It gives us a forum where we can address issues, both in terms of regulation and policy, both at the state and the interstate and the national level. And this gives us an opportunity to respond with accurate data, and that enables us to be able to move forward in the production of the coal, which is so vital to this state. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Harris. And next proponent in the House. Do we have any more proponents in the House? James or John, I think we've got two proponents online.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We do have two proponents online, starting with Mr. Clark.
Mr. Clark, welcome.
And if you could unmute, please, Mr. Clark.
All right, can you hear me now?
Yes, sir.
Thank you very much. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Tom Clark, C-L-A-R-K-E. Tom is T-O-M. I've been executive director of the IMCC for a little over 5 years. Montana has actually been participating in IMCC functions since 2012 and became an associate member in 2019. I testify today as a proponent of SB 55 at the request of the Montana DEQ. It would adopt the Interstate Mining Compact Commission, by which Montana would become a full member of IMCC, giving it full voting rights and IMCC. This compact was first adopted in 1966 by Pennsylvania and Kentucky. It currently has 26 member states. We serve as a collective voice for state mining regulatory and abandoned mine lands, or AML, programs with the federal government. This includes Congress, the Office of Surface Mining, Fish and Wildlife Service, BLM, EPA, Corps of Engineers, MSHA, and other federal agencies. Some examples of our recent work include serving as the voice of the states in implementation of the coal AML parts of the bipartisan infrastructure law, organizing a new first of its kind for federal hard rock AML program, informing Congress the need to authorize state set-aside accounts so infrastructure law funds can be used to pay for long-term AML costs. We also have brought the perspective of the states to the Interagency Working Group on Mining Law Reform. In Congress, the Committees of Jurisdiction on Mining Issues recognize us for our expertise. Another function we serve, as has been mentioned earlier by several proponents, is we serve as a platform for mining agency leaders to benchmark with their peers from other states. As for myself, I have a mining engineering degree and a law degree. I worked underground as a coal miner in West Virginia and in Pennsylvania. I was a lawyer for two of the nation's largest coal mining companies before returning to my home state of West Virginia, where I worked for the Department of Environmental Protection for 21 years, first as counsel to its mining division and later as director of that division. Thank you for allowing me to testify, and I'll be happy to answer any questions. And happy St. Patrick's Day to all the Irish out there. And I think we're all a little bit Irish on St. Patrick's Day. So,
thank you, Mr. Clark. And yes, if you could stand by for questions, we'd appreciate it. And our next proponent.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The next proponent will be Heather McDowell.
Hi, everyone. Sorry about the delay. You have to actually rejoin as an attendee or as a panelist. So good afternoon, everyone. My name is Heather McDowell, MCDOWELL, and I'm here on behalf of Sibania Stillwater. Our mining operations in Stillwater and Sweetgrass counties are the only primary producers of platinum and palladium in the country. And we're producing just one of a few of the critical minerals actually in mining operation production today in the U.S. Our operations annually contribute $6 billion to Montana's economic output. That's about 6% of Montana's total economic output. We have almost 1,900 employees between our two mines and our metal processing facility in Columbus and Sweetgrass counties. We believe that responsible mining of critical minerals can and should be done right here in Montana because we have robust environmental regulation. We have sophisticated government payment structures that disseminate mining revenue, and we have prevailing wages and work conditions. We believe Montana should participate as a full member in the Interstate Mining Compact because it's important for Montana, which often has progressive views of mining regulation, to have a full seat at the table with the other mining states. We believe we have the most stringent tailings and water regulations here in Montana and the world. And when federal standards are considered, we want Montana's DEQ to weigh in on those, drawing on its extensive and progressive experience in mining regulation. So for those reasons, we support SB 55. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. McDowell. And if you can stand by for questions, we'd appreciate it. John, do we have any more proponents online?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Those were the only two proponents online.
Okay, thank you, John. Do we have any opponents in the House? Opponents to SB 55.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Caroline Canarios, C-A-N-A-R-I-O-S, on behalf of Northern Plains Resource Council. With respect to the good senator from Weibo, we rise in what I would say is light opposition to Senate Bill 55. Specifically, our members would like to see the funds we receive from Office of Surface Mining Reclamation Enforcement go to projects here in Montana and on the ground, especially in reclamation work, rather than for advocacy work at the federal level that's already taking place, already being done. So for that reason, we stand in opposition to this bill. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, ma'am. And I'm not going to butcher your last name. Do we have any more opponents in the House?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Derf Johnson. That's spelled D-E-R-F-J-O-H-N-S-O-N, and I represent the Montana Environmental Information Center. And happy St. Patrick's Day, but more importantly, happy belated St. Urho's Day, which is far more important in my mind. Unfortunately, I have to rise in opposition to SB 55, and my opposition is limited somewhat to the last speaker. I see a lot of good that comes from this program in terms of the abandoned mine land stuff and in terms of agencies coordinating. Our issue primarily arises in when this particular compact commission drifts into the legislative and policy arena and takes pretty hard stances on critical pieces of legislation that I would view as being somewhat political. And so, with your permission, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to hand out a small handout.
Please do.
And Mr. Chairman, this is, I tried to highlight the relevant portions just to help you, assist you get through that document, as I know that you have plenty to read. But what this is it's an official comment to the Interagency Working Group on Hard Rock Mining Reform that was developed by President Biden and other agencies to really take a hard look at a lot of the federal laws that we have regulating hard rock mining across the country. And really, the gist of the letter is that everything's hunky-dory. This is a letter from the IMCC to that interagency working group. And it's problematic in the sense that apparently there's been a position taken that everything is fine with the 1872 mining law and that there's no problems associated with the way that's being administered. This is the same 1872 mining law, which recently allowed a person to stake claims up in the Zortman-Landusky area on top of a reclaimed mine site that we have invested about $70 million in reclamation activities at this point on. So I take issue that there doesn't need to be some major changes associated with it. They're opposed to royalty assessments for publicly owned minerals in this letter, opposed to significant changes to any environmental regulations, opposed to any federal financial assurance requirements, which is something that I would say is direly needed. I know that we have a program here in Montana, but I would say that its implementation is lackluster at best. We recently made the headlines for Montana tunnels, and they're roughly $17 million in underbonded reclamation activities. So this is still an ongoing problem. And opposed to a leasing system for these minerals. And so, again, I really want to focus on our problems associated with using taxpayer dollars to pay somebody to lobby on behalf of these issues. And I know that this particular legislature has certainly taken a stance in terms of when, for example, an agency testifies, they're often only allowed to come up here and say that they're informational. And we also have a code of ethics that's associated with this type of activity. So I would say that you would respectfully have to, I would request that you vote no on this, or that there'll be some real sideboards associated with when and how we enter into this type of agreement. And so I would ask for a vote no. Thank you. And I think there's some feedback coming in on this mic, perhaps.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Is there any more opponents? Any more opponents? John, do we have any online opponents?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There are no online opponents.
Okay. Thank you, John. Questions from the panel? Oh, I'm sorry, informational witnesses. Any in the House? John, do we have any online?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. No informational witnesses online.
Okay. Do we have any questions from the panel? Representative Perry.
Mr. Chair, for James Fair. I didn't say that right then.
Mr. Fear?
Fear? Okay.
Mr. Chair, Representative Perry.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Fair, why do we actually need this bill? I mean, if we're acting with the organization already, and why should the state actually be the ones to say, why can't the DEQ just join?
Because it's a requirement, Mr. Chair, Representative Perry, it's a requirement of the IMCC that we there is legislation for this. That's what it's been a requirement for the other 26 states as well. And the associate membership doesn't give us the same voice that a voting membership would. And the cost difference, if you looked at the fiscal note, I mean, the cost, we're looking at about a $30,000 a year investment. And when you look at the return on that investment through those that, you know, we've helped to get the abandoned mine funds to help clean up different areas in Montana, make them safer, better for public health, better for the environment. It's been a good thing.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Are there any more questions? Representative France.
For Mr. Clark, please, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Clark.
It'll be just one moment for Mr. Clark to be there.
Thank you, John.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Clark, first question would be, how does the commission take positions on issues like new regulations or legislation that might be in Congress?
Well, we don't very often take positions on regulations or laws in Congress. We do inform Congress, provide a lot of information for Congress to consider in making informed judgments on those sorts of laws. But to the heart of your question on things like rulemakings or agency efforts on which at the federal level on which they are seeking input from others, we usually have meetings in advance. We discuss the issues. And based upon the discussions, I prepare a draft of comments, which is circulated to the various state members. We then, based upon those comments, refine our comments on behalf of the group when we're making them. If there's too much division in the group, we will not comment. An example of that was the Clean Water Act redefinition of the waters of the United States rule in 2018. Our members felt like that was too divisive an issue to comment on, so we did not. On other issues, we have commented. We usually won't comment unless there's a strong consensus in favor of the set of comments, because as a group, we have governors from both parties. It's a bipartisan organization, and we don't want to get to the place where we see Congress being with a lot of divisiveness that causes gridlock. It's more of a collegial organization, there have been a few instances in which there was a strong majority of members in favor of a set of comments that we filed, but a state disagreed, and when that happens, we will identify that state as not having joined in the comments that we submitted.
Thank you.
Follow up?
So if I asked you for the notes or minutes behind the letter that Mr. Johnson circulated to us, could I get a better picture of how the positions were taken? Would those be available to me as a legislator or as a citizen concerned about how a quasi-governmental organization was taking these positions?
We developed those based upon a series of teams meetings of as many as 40 states who were weighing in on issues related to the work of the Interagency Mining Group or Interagency Working Group on Mining Law Reform. We had multiple meetings. I prepared a set of draft comments. I circulated them widely. even to states beyond our membership. All the comments were taken into account, and the comments were submitted without much opposition from states led by Republicans or Democrats, and those comments, frankly, were carefully crafted to avoid taking positions. We suggested that much of the mining law did not need to be reformed in order to accomplish the principles that the administration announced. If you want to, the history of that working group is that on February 22nd of last year, the Biden administration announced its principles for mining law reform and established more or less a charter for this working group. The same day, the Interior Department Secretary announced the formation of the working group with Steve Felgus, the Assistant Secretary or Deputy Assistant Secretary for Lands Mineral Management, as its lead. That group reached out to us as the organization representing states. We organized the states to make comments and intentionally tried to take a neutral tact. If you read our comments on the whole, there's not a whole lot of advocacy there. We do question whether a change to the mining law is necessary to change the revenue stream coming off federal minerals. We don't take a position on whether the stream ought to be changed, but urge them to consider all different forms of revenue being derived from the mining of minerals before they make a decision to change current revenue streams from mining on federal lands. We don't...
I've really appreciated the depth of your answer, sir. And
I'm sorry, if I explained how to build a watch when you asked what time it was, I apologize.
No, that's fine. It's late on a Friday afternoon, and it's St. Patrick's Day. But I do appreciate that the letter was carefully vetted before it was sent, and I appreciate your thoughtful comments.
Do you have any more questions from the panel? I guess I've got a couple, and I guess I'm going to have to butcher it. Ms. Canolis, please correct me.
Mr. Chair, it's Canarios, and I'll kind of do, I think I remember a good representative from Great Falls, a fellow Greek. It's like Canary and Cheerios, and you kind of merge them together there.
Hey, that I can understand. Ms. Canarios, you made comment that the $30,000 that is our membership price could be better utilized elsewhere. So give me some examples of what you would do with that.
Well, I think that's a great question, Mr. Chair. I think in communicating with our members and in communicating with the department about where those funds are being allocated from, it's not, from our understanding after our communications with the department, it's not earmarked for this necessarily. So it is coming from, you know, where it might be pulled from other existing work from those funds from OSMRE. We would like to see that go to reclamation work here on the ground. I think whatever that may be would be the discretion of the department and how that might be allocated to work here in Montana. But reclaiming, you know, abandoned mines, I think, is a great example of the good work that this could be allocated towards. So that's the position of our organization. But I'm happy to think through some additional specific examples. I think it's a great question for us to think through where that money could be better spent. Get back to you, Mr. Chair.
And that's kind of where I'm going, is that how far would that $30,000 go on a reclamation project? You know, I mean, is it measurable, or would that need a whole lot more behind it to make an impact?
Sure. That's another great question, Mr. Chair. Not being an expert on DEQ funding, I would probably defer to them to answer how far that $30,000 would go to another project. But I'm happy to look into that more and get back to you as well.
Okay, thank you. And Mr. Fair, I guess I'd ask you, how far would that $30,000 go on a reclamation project?
Chair Gunderson, it would not go very far. We could use it for some safety equipment and maybe a portion of some studies, but not far.
And if you compared that to what we learned in having eyes on and a voting position on Hard Rock mining positions, I guess, and knowing what's going on, how does that weigh out?
Mr. Chair, yes. When you look at the millions of dollars we've received to help clean up our environment for abandoned mines, millions of dollars for a $30,000 a year investment, you know, moving forward and then even having more say with the IMCC, it's a great investment.
Would you say we're getting a good bang for our buck?
Mr. Chair, absolutely.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Fair. Mr. Bennion?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Bennion, thank you for the letter. That kind of, for me, solidified a lot of things and put a lot of things into perspective. And I just wanted to say thank you, because that meant a lot to be able to frame that the way you did. And I guess, are there any other questions from the panel? Seeing none, Senator Heimbaugh, would you like to close on your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee. I really don't have anything to close except for what you heard was from some great lobbyists that know what they're talking about, that are for this program, and a couple lobbyists that said they were light opposition, so that should tell you everything. And I know how good these lobbyists are because I've experienced them both firsthand. So thank you. I urge you to pass Senate Bill 55.
Thank you, Senator Heimbaugh. And this closes the hearing on SB 55. And let's open up the hearing on Senate Bill 42. Senator Heimbaugh, you're up again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Steve Heimbaugh, H-I-N-E-B-A-U-C-H. I represent Senate District 18, which is Weibo, Dawson, and Richland counties. I just had an easy bill, and now I got an easier bill. This Senate Bill 42 is, this bill creates efficiencies in state government by eliminating burdensome requirements from private landowners, local governments, certain utilities, and applying for easements for existing uses on state trust lands. This bill amends the law related to applications for easements on state lands by modifying surveying requirements for right-of-ways of applications and creating categorical exclusions for certain easement purposes such as pre-existing roads and utilities. It also alleviates the financial burden of private landowners and utilities in applying for an easement across state land or straight trust lands by allowing the department discretion over surveying requirements, MEPA, and antiquities analysis and lease settlements, which also saves time and cuts red tape. Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator. Do we have any proponents in the House for SB 42?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Ryan Weiss. That's Ryan with an R, Weiss, W-E-I-S-S. I'm the Real Estate Management Bureau Chief in the Trust Lands Division at Montana's DNRC. We process easement applications and provide them to the Land Board for their consideration for approval. I'm here today in support of this bill and thank the good Senator Heimbaugh for sponsoring this important legislation that provides for cost savings and efficiencies to all parties involved with the easement application process on state trust lands. This bill for revising easement applications recreates efficiencies from the former historic road right-of-way statute by allowing the department to waive survey requirements for right-of-way easements and of existing uses if the department determines that there's adequate information available to define the boundaries of that right-of-way. Like the historic statute that expired, this bill also provides an exemption for antiquities and environmental analysis, in addition to the involvement of surface lessees when the land is subject to prior lease. This exemption would exist solely for existing access roads and utility corridors that meet specific criteria outlined in statute and the Land Board road access policy. The statute implementing the historic road right-of-way expired in 2021. The expired statute provided a process for local government, landowners, and entities associated with utility infrastructure to acquire legal easement across state trust land that was on the ground in trespass. Initially set to expire in 2005, the historic statute had been extended several times in previous legislative sessions, however, was not extended in 2021 during the 67th legislature. Prior to that historic program expiring in October of 2021, the DNRCU fielded several calls from concerned stakeholders who were concerned how they could perfect legal access across state lands to their private property or for county roads already in place or utility easement corridors. At that time, right before the day that the bill expired, we received over 230 easement applications by those that wanted to secure access across state lands using that historic road right-of-way statute, rather than use the standard easement program that's in place today. The standard easement applications under existing statute require a survey prepared by a professional licensed survey or a professional engineer, and they're not exempt from antiquities or environmental review, even if the road right-of-way would have met that exemption criteria under the now expired historic road right-of-way statute. This requires that the applicant pays for a survey and that the department complete further analysis that could take from 30 to 90 days. For uses that are already on the ground, and in some cases, these uses have been in place for decades. Both requirements add time and money for easement applicants and to the department to review and process these right-of-way and easement applications. After the first hearing in the Senate, the department received questions about settlement for lessee damages because of issuing an easement, and I'd like to clarify that this exemption is for existing uses only, and that the surface leases exclude portions of unusable trust land. A grazing lessee, for example, will not have their stocking rate based on unusable portions of the state trust lands. They might have a 640-acre section as a lease, for example, but if 50 acres are encumbered by an easement, they would not be subject to paying or having their stocking rate and associated fee structure of that lease impacted by the unusable acres. Furthermore, when we issue an easement, there are terms that require the grantee of the easement to reclaim and restore the easement corridor and compensate the agricultural or grazing lessee for any damages or impacts to their property from operation and maintenance of the road or utility corridor that's associated with that easement. So, for example, that would be reclaiming the land if it had to be dug up for an underground utility pipeline, any moving of fence and reseeding so that the acreage could be put to production as soon as the easement operation and maintenance is concluded. In closing, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this bill recreates the same efficiencies in DNRC processes to allow for expedient application review, reduces excessive costs and regulations that can be burdensome to easement applicants. Thank you for your time and support. I'll be happy to answer any questions should you have any.
Thank you, Mr. Weiss. Do we have any more proponents in the House? Any more proponents? John, do we have any proponents online?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There are no proponents online.
Do we have any opponents in the House? Any opponents? John, do we have any online?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. No opponents online.
Okay. Do we have any informational witnesses in the House? John, do we have any online?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. No informational witnesses online.
Let's see, do we have any questions from the panel? Representative Malone.
Mr. Chair, a question for Mr. Weiss.
Mr. Weiss.
If I got that right. What?
Weiss.
Weiss, I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair, Representative
before
Malone.
E, except after, whatever. Mr. Chair, Mr. Weiss. On page 4, line 25, it says damages for lessees, improvements, et cetera, are not allowed Then on 77-2-107, it says, in current law, you have to have some negotiated damage settlement. Is there a conflict there, or am I reading that wrong?
Mr. Chair, Representative, the exclusion in the statute that you first referenced, I believe that's essentially stating that, very much like the historic road right-of-way, we don't go through lessee settlement process in issuing an easement if it fits the criteria. And I believe when you reference 77-2-107, I'm not quite following through reading the entirety of this, of page 5.
In the first paragraph.
First paragraph. Thank you. It does appear that there's a conflict there. I'm not certain how to resolve that, but I'd be happy to work towards ensuring that there isn't, if there is a conflict, how to reword that.
Mr. Chair, Mr.
Follow
Weiss.
Follow up.
Can you, is it going to create heart attack? 25 and 26, delete that line, don't you?
26. Mr. Chair, Representative.
Page 4.
On page 4, is your
bottom two lines there.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I don't know that that would actually be necessary, but if it is, it would, and it would provide clarity to the bill, I'd be open to it.
Mr. Coleman, do you have input there?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I wasn't in the Senate hearing, but maybe Mr. Weiss could confirm. I think the original bill was limiting this to roads that were constructed prior to 1997. And so if the road was constructed prior to 1997, the damage, any damages that would have been incurred would have already been sustained. But I think when the Senate took that out, that there is no time limit now on the nature of the easement. So it could have been conceivably it could have been constructed a couple weeks ago, Mr. Chairman. Is that right?
Mr. Chairman, thank you, Mr. Coleman. Correct. The initial, prior to the amendments, the trespass statute was referenced in here as the date for the department checking if something is considered existing or not, and that was the 1997 date that Mr. Coleman referenced. For sake of simplicity, in the amendments, we remove that to keep the trespass statute as a standalone statute and try to keep the easement into one. And we may have inadvertently created confusion there, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, follow up. For my historic knowledge on easements, are you still charging for easements for?
That's a yes. Mr. Chair, Representative Malone, yes, we are. We're required by the Constitution and statute to receive fair market value for any disposition of state trust lands.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions from the panel? Representative France.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just, Mr. Weiss, going forward, would there be roads or other types of right-of-ways that would fall within this statute and wouldn't need new roads or new rights-of-ways that wouldn't need a survey?
Mr. Chair, Representative France, this statute with the revisions gives the department discretion if it's an existing use. So if it's a new use, it would require survey, meaning if it's not on the ground, then it wouldn't, if it's not existing yet, anything new moving forward would require a survey, the environmental analysis, the antiquities review, and lessee settlement. However, if it was existing and it fits that criteria as outlined here, it could be exempt.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
So nothing new will fit under this statute, and then there's discretion on things that are on the ground right now where the department could choose to require a survey if it seemed warranted. Am I understanding this right?
Mr. Chair, Representative, close. However, by combining the historic elements of the historic statute into the standard easement application process, we essentially have both in one. So the so new uses would fall under this statute as well. It essentially has the new uses outlined here for standard easement application processes. However, if something is existing on the ground, this amendment to the existing statute provides department discretion.
Okay. Just briefly describe the kinds of easements or the kinds of easements that this legislation provoked in terms of landowner or lessees coming forward or easement holders coming forward and saying, wait a minute, I didn't understand this statute or that I'm concerned about it. What are we looking at by way in terms of people thinking they need to come in and get straightened out with the state land?
Hey, Representative France, thanks for the question. But right before the historic expired, I mentioned we had over 230 applicants. The majority of them were utilities that provide, whether it be fiber optics or overhead power lines, that are already on the ground but had not secured an easement. There are quite a few private access roads to provide farm and ranch operations, in addition to county roads. We had probably over 30 counties we've been working with or have worked with to secure perfected access along county roads that have been on the ground for decades, and that benefits all the private property owners who use those county roads that are there technically in trespass. So those are the three primary types of easements that would fall under the historic would be county roads, local roads, private access roads or driveways, and then utilities.
Well, I won't go any deeper, Mr. Chair, but I guess I'm concerned when utilities are building pipelines and power lines across state lands and have historically been outside your oversight. So I hope we get that straightened out. It seems to me that those kind of uses of state lands should have a survey attached to them and otherwise be are far different in my mind than a local ranch road.
Mr. Weiss, I guess would you have any problem if we came up with a minor amendment on line or section 5 or number 5, I guess, of section 3 that put that date back in that just solidifies that? Because that was going to be my question too before Representative Malone stole my idea.
Mr. Chair, are you referring to the trespass date of 1997?
Correct. October, whatever it is, that they've struck 1st. Out on page 3, line 25.
Mr. Chair, I'm open to whatever amendments the committee would and the sponsor would see fit.
Okay, we'll work on that and probably just come up with a simple fix there on that line then. Okay. So it was page 2, line what?
9.
We just put that back with that. Okay, we'll work on that and figure it out from there. That's a possibility. Do we have any other questions from the panel? Seeing none, Senator Heinbaugh, would you like to close on your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. I just request a due pass on Senate Bill 42. And I don't know what Mr. Coleman will figure out how that's supposed to work, but we thought that we had that all handled, and I think it was due to crops that were the right of way was already there, so I don't think it really has a lot to affect. So anyway, thank you. We request a due pass.
Thank you, Senator, and Mr. Coleman's superpowers to fix anything without super glue or duct tape. So
great.
We'll take it from there. Thank you, Senator. This closes the hearing on SB 42. We're going to open is opening on SB 215, Senator Fitzpatrick, welcome. Would you like to open on your bill?
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Nice to be here. Steve Fitzpatrick, Senate District 10 from Great Falls. Nice to be here. I was just sitting as I walked and thinking about the days when I was in House Natural Resources, so, but that was a few sessions ago. For your consideration is Senate Bill 215, and what this bill does, this is an unusual bill here, and let me explain what this bill does, because you've never seen a bill like this in the legislature. And what I mean is, what this bill does is it is a directive to the Department of environmental quality to amend an administrative rule. So there is an existing administrative rule out there on connections to public water and wastewater supply systems. And what this bill does is it tells them to go and amend their rule to meet the directives that we have here in this bill. And just so everybody can see the administrative rule that's going to be amended, I have printed off some copies for your I guess somebody was ahead of me and had the administrative rule. So you can see the administrative rule, and what we're doing here with this bill is we're telling the Department of Environmental Quality to amend the administrative rule so that if a person wants to put in a subdivision, and that subdivision is within 1,000 feet of a municipal county or water or sewer district and water and wastewater system, that they must allow a connection. If you look at the administrative rule right now, it says that you must be able to connect if your subdivision is within 500 feet of a public water system. This bill, if it goes into effect, will amend that rule so it says if you are within 1,000 feet of that water sewer system and you are next to a stream or a lake or some other body of water, you get to connect to that water system. And the reason for that is that obviously people are developing next to bodies of water, and you potentially have contamination that could come through septic tanks. You also have concerns, obviously, with exempt wells. If somebody plops an exempt well next to a stream, you could divert water out of that stream. So this is a way of ensuring that we have clean water and we're not contaminating adjacent bodies and streams with contaminants or potentially affecting any water rights. So that's the idea here with this bill. You can obviously read the administrative rule and see the criteria that must be met by the public water system. So the public water system obviously has to have a adequate capacity in order to connect. The connections are authorized. There's enough water rights in the system to ensure that this new connection is not going to affect any existing water rights. So, and then obviously there are all kinds of standards in here that need to be met for pollution control. So, that's the bill. I think this is one for actually protecting the environment and ensuring that we have clean water in areas adjacent to municipal services. So, with that, I'll sit down and listen to the proponents and opponents, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator. Do we have any proponents in the House?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is John Sinrud, S-I-N-R-U-D. I'm just representing myself. I just saw that this was going through a piece of property up in Kalispell, Flathead County, and trying to understand why an individual could be denied or a municipality or a public and sewer water district could refuse an individual from hooking up when they're right next to a body of water. And there's an individual that has 12 acres sitting right off of Whitefish River. It's 1,250 linear feet of Whitefish River. He's within 700 feet of the Evergreen Sewer and Water District. They have a certain compact with City of Kalispell because there's only one sewer plant in Kalispell and the Evergreen Sewer and Water District. So we went to the city of Kalispell and asked them if they would allow us to, or Evergreen, to expand their district and connect into the Evergreen Sewer and Water District. It's 700 feet away. And in fact, there's 1,300 feet on a high-pressure main on top of the hill, and then right down below, it's probably 100 feet away from a low-pressure main. The city of Kalispell said no. We have the opportunity to say no. In the current rule, and it's the only place where this rule exists. It's just a rule, not a law. It's the only place it exists. And it gives the option for the city to say, no, we're not going to accept you, therefore allowing an individual to go ahead and subdivide and put 12 septic tanks in, 12 individual wells, or however large that property is. And I just didn't think it was right that you're sitting right next to the city of, or you're sitting right next to a sewer and water district, and you can't connect to it, and you've got 12 acres on 1,250 linear feet of Whitefish River, and you're going to put 12 septic tanks in. So, went to DEQ. The only way that I could figure this out, and working with Senator Fitzpatrick, which I appreciate, is basically forcing them that if you have a property on a body of water that you want to go ahead and develop, and you're within 1,000 feet of that sewer and water district, whether it's a city or a district, that they have to accept you. They can't deny you. That's good for the environment. There's been many, many studies done in regards to how bad septics are, so on and so forth, especially up in the Flathead Valley, and there's a lot of them. And they have certain critical areas, and a lot of the critical areas are right by the rivers and streams and the lakes. And so I thought that this would be a great environmental bill to say, hey, you know what, you can't deny individuals like this that want to go ahead and connect. They pay for the connection. There's absolutely no output or expense from the city or the sewer and water district to go ahead and expand it. The developer puts all the price in for all the infrastructure to do the right thing, develop the property, but we're protecting our waters. So I do urge a due pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sinner. Do we have any more proponents in the House? Any more proponents?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm standing in support of this bill initially in the House side, in the Senate side. We were opposed to this. However, there's been some amendments that have been attached to it that I think address our concerns, primarily with giving cities and counties the discretion to say no if and when these particular hookups may pose problems for their system. So with those amendments, I think we're happy with this bill. Mildly happy with this bill. I don't think I see much or many circumstances in which this will kick in, but I would ask for due pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Do we have any more proponents in the House? Seeing none, John, do we have any proponents online?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There are no proponents online.
Okay, thank you. Do we have any opponents in the House? Any opponents? Seeing none, do we have any online, John?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There are no opponents online.
Thank you, John. Do we have any informational witnesses in-house? Seeing none, do we have any online, John?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We do have Rachel Clark, and she is about ready to enter the room.
Ms. Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Rachel Clark. That's C-L-A-R-K. I am the Chief of the Engineering Bureau at DEQ, which includes the subdivision section. I'm here to answer any questions you may have for DEQ.
Thank you, Ms. Clark. Do you have any questions from the panel? Representative Malone?
Mr. Chair, question for the sponsor.
Senator?
Mr. Chair, Senator Fitzpatrick, you mentioned if the adjoining, in your testimony, I heard it, that adjoining new subdivision has water rights. What did you mean by that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Malone, so good question. So one of the keys that before you connect, the city or the municipal system must have an adequate water right to provide service to that subdivision. So I'll give you an example. The city of Helena, for example, here has a water right that that's sufficient for the purposes of the city. Now, if we were going to go connect, they would need to make sure that that water right is enough to provide water to the new subdivision. If you look here on the administrative rule, that's one of the criteria that must be met, that there is an appropriate water right exists for the connection. So that's something that needs to be met before the subdivision can connect.
Mr. Chair, thank you. And I didn't see it in your bill, and I wanted it in your bill, but if it's in the ARM, I guess we're okay then.
So, Mr. Chairman, Representative Malone, yeah, we wanted to specify in the bill that it would be subject. So if you look at it would be line 2425, the underlying language, the amendments in ARM 17.36.328 required to say are subject to subsections 2 and 3 of the ARM. So if you look at subsection 2, subsection 3, we are incorporating that language about, you know, having adequate size to meet the needs of the subdivision, having an appropriate water right, and so forth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Marler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually have a question for Mr. Sinrud.
Mr. Sinrud.
Mr. Chair, Representative Marler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Sinrud, what was the situation, if you can speculate or just share with us, why would the city of Kalispell tell them that they were not allowed to connect? Because isn't the connection, it's the developer's responsibility to build the connection out. They weren't asking the city to build in. What was the situation?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Marler, I've listened to that hearing. It was February 18th. 2017, 18, one of the two. And the only thing that I got out of that hearing, and I went to the hearing and then I re-listened to it because it's been many years, it was just political. They didn't want to give up any more access to Evergreen Sewer and Water. Right now, Evergreen Sewer and Water District is bound in a certain area. And in order to have additional expansion of that area, which is, if you're familiar with Kalispell, it's on the east side, and that's where you got Flathead River, you got Whitefish River, you got Stillwater River, you got a lot of rivers. They just did not want Evergreen Sewer and Water District to expand. And there's a lot of properties that are kind of hanging out there that do need to be put into sewer and water, you know, on a public sewer and water system. And the city of Kalispell's sewer system has a lot of capacity to expand. It was just a political issue. They discussed it, and then they just didn't do anything with it. In fact, there were three properties that wanted to be put in. And this is what's bizarre. You've got River Road, and then on the east side, you've got Whitefish River. But River Road is the boundary line for Evergreen Sewer and Water, and the sewer and water system is literally right in River Road. But the property on the west side wanted to annex in, and the city said no. I don't know what the reason is. It makes no sense to me. This is a great bill. It's a great idea to remove septic systems.
Follow up. I can see something forming.
No.
Okay. Representative Hinkle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for Ms. Clark.
Ms. Clark.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hinkle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Clark, do you know the history at all of the ARM 17.36.328 subsection 1 and the 500 feet? Do you have any history on why the 500 feet was initially put into the rules and not another number?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hinkle, that bill has been in, that has been in rule for a very long time, almost certainly predated my time at DEQ, which is almost two decades. I could go back and try and find the administrative rule notice where it was originally adopted, but it has been a very long time.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Clark, that wouldn't be necessary. I just didn't know if you happen to know offhand. Thank you.
Okay, Representative Walsh.
Mr. Chair, a question for Mr. Sinrud.
Mr. Sinrud.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Sinrud, I think you answered this, but I just want to make it clear that so if the developer requests this, they pay all the hookup fees, the project gets annexed in, all the individual homeowners or whatever then become part of the district and pay those fees and those type of things.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Walsh, that is correct. The fact is that you cannot use a municipal system without being annexed in. That's part of the subdivision process under zoning laws, DEQ, all of that stuff. It is cohesive. This is the only location where they said, okay, currently if you're 500 feet, we're trying to expand it, but it's the same process. Whether it was 500 feet in existing arms, it's the same process now. Nothing changes. The rules are all the same. All we're saying is if you got a piece of property next to water and you want to hook in, hook in. You're going to have to annex in that, just like in Evergreen, the situation. The Evergreen Sewer and Water District will have to expand in order to incorporate that in. The impact fees will be paid. Everything's going to be paid by the developer, and there's no additional cost to add that in regards to infrastructure to Evergreen or the city of Kalispell. Impact fees for the sewer will be paid to the city of Kalispell, just like any other property in that district.
Thank Follow you. Up? Appreciate it. No, I'm good.
Okay. Any more questions? Representative Konauer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and maybe for the sponsor we can start out with.
Senator?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Fitzpatrick. I just wanted to follow up just to make sure that this does not include associations, water and sewer associations that might be out there on the ground, that it's very, it looks like it's very narrowly tailored to municipal and county water or sewer districts.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Representative Konauer, that's correct. If you look at the language we use very specific language, municipal and county water and or sewer districts, and then you've got water and wastewater. So it's municipal and county water and sewer districts. So it's municipal services, obviously, and then if you've got a water district out there. So.
Follow up,
Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to make sure that we've got the correct structure here to make sure that it is both A and B that have to, and C that have to be in place before they're allowed to take advantage of this piece of legislation.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Konauer, yeah, again, so if you look, it's actually A, B, and C, right? So it's the and right there at the end of impacts. You've got the and, so all those criteria have to be met.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Perry.
Mr. Chair, for the sponsor, just to clear my mind on this, is this bill specifically dealing with one water district in one town, or is this supposedly going to take care of things that are happening around the state?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Perry, this will be an amendment that applies statewide. We're amending an administrative rule. It's going to apply everywhere in the state of Montana.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Do you have any more questions, Representative France?
Mr. Chair, Senator, I guess you're ordering DEQ to amend its rules. Does DEQ have any feelings about the matter, or are they just here as an informational witness and letting the winds blow whichever direction we want to blow them?
Mr. Chairman, Representative France, obviously they didn't come in as opponents, so they're
well, that's
here,
a good thing, I guess.
They're here as informational. I'm not sure I want to characterize DEQ's position one way or the other, but you know, I'll just go by the fact they're not opponents and that they're testifying here as informational.
All right, and then last thing I have to say, I like your tie. I think you've got some excellent taste and appreciate the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr.
Representative France, do you want to redirect that to DEQ?
At the chair's invitation, sure. Ms. Clark, does the department have a position on this? Or any thoughts, pro or con?
Mr. Chairman, Representative France, the department is here as an informational witness, so we are neither proponents or opponents of it. If the bill passes, we would obviously rewrite our rules to accommodate it.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. It seems like there might be more of a story here, but I think we can move on with this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative France. I think we've gleaned all we can out of that one. Representative Konauer.
Short of exercising our subpoena power and bringing the witness in, but
Representative Konauer.
Mr. Chair, and I think that maybe this is for Ms. Clark.
Ms. Clark? Might.
Thank you,
Mr. Chairman, Representative Konauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Ms. Clark. I wanted to, if we are amending, essentially are requiring that the arm be amended in this language, and there's basically a reference back to the arm, does that still allow for the department to change its criteria in the arm at any time in the future?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Konauer, the department could change its criteria, but I don't believe we could change it to be less stringent than the law ever.
Mr. Chair, follow up. And Ms. Clark, but the way this is constructed is it is referencing criteria that's in 1736.328, but that criteria is actually not in this law. It's referenced. So if the department were to change its criteria in 1736.328, that arm, that would still be a reference from this section. So can you still amend that administrative rule in the future?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Konauer, we're actually in the middle of changing that rule by right now, but I think we would have to try to accommodate the legislative intent in this bill. However it's rewritten or moved, it would still have to try and accommodate this bill language.
Follow up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I'd like to follow up with the sponsor, if I might.
Senator?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative, you can understand where I'm going with this, since it's just a reference between the two sections, and it's basically saying just one portion of the arm is being, I guess, directed. The rest of the arm can still be changed by the department. Is that your understanding?
Mr. Chair, Representative Konauer, yeah, that's correct. I wouldn't see why any other parts of the administrative rule wouldn't be subject to normal administrative rule processes where things get changed and amended. So, yes, you could change the other parts.
Thank you.
Representative Carlin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question for the sponsor. I noticed in statute here, is 1,000 feet, so any boundary of the subdivision within 1,000 feet. Was just wondering, because I know that I'm sure if we look at topography across the state, you know, in some areas I could see more or less. I guess, is that pulled from any other, like, is that 1,000 feet pulled from somewhere else? Or is that just kind of a random number that works in the situation we're trying to address? I guess, and then my follow-up question would be on that. Is there any benefit you think to providing a little more discretion to the DQ in situations when maybe 1,500 feet might be, you know, more appropriate given, you know, the unique topography of a certain area?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlin, that was a good question. I don't want to just say we pulled the number out of the sky for 1,000 feet, but there is I think you can understand there's a certain arbitrariness to it anyways at 500 feet. So, I mean, I think 1,000 feet is a significant distance. You know, you're going to, I think at that point, be fairly, I wouldn't say fairly far away, but, you know, a reasonable distance away from a body of water. So I think that's, I think it's a good number. In terms of other numbers, I guess I'll leave that. If you want to go further, have at it. But I think we're comfortable at 1,000 feet. So, you know, if you want to take it out to 1,500, I'm not going to oppose it. I'm happy to pass the bill through at 1,500 feet. But I think 1,000 works for us at this moment.
Okay. Are there any other questions from the panel? Seeing none, Senator Fitzpatrick, would you like to close on your bill?
I would. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I do have to, I guess, compliment Representative France on his good tie. I wore this today. I had a couple bills on the floor. I wanted to make sure I got the green light. I wore a red tie a couple weeks ago and had a bunch of bills fail. So so with that, I'll close, Mr. Chair. Thank you for a good hearing.
Thank you, Senator Fitzpatrick. This closes the hearing on SB 215. Okay. Okay, we're going to pass consideration on EA for SB 42 because we've got an amendment possible here. We're going to do EA on SB 83, SB 49, SB 55, and SB 215. So if we're back here by 10 till. So let's be back at 4:50, and we'll finish doing EA. And let's adjourn or stand at ease till then. Okay, let's bring House Natural Resources back to order. And Representative Gist, would you like to move SB 83 off the table?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I move that we move SB 83 from the table, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Is there any discussion? Can we take this using a voice call?
Which number were we on?
SB 83. We just took it off the table. So.
I know which one we're talking about now. Then you want to move your amendment.
Do we have any? Not yet. Do we have any discussion on it with Representative France?
I have an amendment, if that's in order, Mr. Chair.
Well, let's get it off the table first, and then we'll move that. Okay, so let's take a voice call.
Wait.
I was just going to say question.
Okay. Seeing that...
question has been called?
Yeah, the representative missed the call. Let's take a voice vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any nays? Seeing none, we now have SB 83 off the table. Let's open EA on SB 83.
Mr. Chair, I move that we do concur in SB 83.
Okay. Do we have any discussion or amendments?
Mr. Chair, France? I have an amendment that I would move.
Okay.
I would move 83.2.1. And all what this amendment does is puts a sunset on this bill. We had a good debate about whether a bigger commission might be better or might dilute local input, and I don't know that there's a way to answer that question definitively. And as I discussed how to move with other members of the committee, we thought let's put a sunset on so that the commission can come back and talk to the legislature in 6 years and say this is really working well and we want you to take the sunset off, or they can say it's not working so well and we can adjust it then. So for a question we can't answer, let's see if we can't get some more data in 6 years and move this forward if it's right or not.
Yeah, and I totally agree with you, Representative France. I think this is a way to give basically the commission a performance audit in a way. Let's see what happens in 6 years and let them prove out their hypothesis that it's going to be a good thing, which I think it will. Is there any other discussion? Hearing none, we need to...
Question.
Have a voice vote. All those in favor say aye.
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 Any nays? Proxies?
Oh. Representative Vinton and Representative Knudsen vote aye by proxy.
Weatherwax votes aye by proxy.
Okay, so would you like to move the
yes,
the bill
yes.
is once amended?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I move that Senate Bill 83, once amended, Great Western Montana Conservation Commission, recommend do concur in.
Okay. And seeing no discussion.
Question.
Hearing the question. Let's take a voice vote on this one. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any nays? And that moves SB 83 to the floor.
Mr. Chair, who's going to carry that?
SB 83, I will. Okay.
Mr. Chair, we need to do proxies for Representative Knudsen and Representative Vinton vote aye by proxy as well. Thank you.
And so does Representative Weatherwax, aye by proxy.
Okay, so let's open the EA on SB 49.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I move that Senate Bill 49, generally revised cabin sale sites, do be concurred in.
And can we do a voice vote on that one as well? Okay, all those in favor of moving the bill, say aye.
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 Any nays?
Nay.
Show that Representative Fitzgerald was a nay. Any proxies?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Vinton and Representative Knutson vote aye by proxy.
Weatherwax votes aye by proxy.
Okay, so we have a unanimous vote. Other than...
No, not unanimous.
Other than with Representative Fitzgerald. So we'll close the EA on SB 49 and move it to the floor. Okay, let's open EA on SB 55.
Mr. Chair, I move that SB 55, Joint Interstate Mining Compact Commission, do be concurred in.
Okay, do we have any discussion? I would like to make a comment. Like I say, I think this is a really good thing. The questions that I asked were about the $30,000 and how much impact it would have if it weren't used for this. And I think we're definitely getting the most bang for our buck for that fee to be a member. And I think it keeps a much better eye on whatever's going on at the federal level. Representative Konauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I know it's going to shock everyone, but I also support this bill, and the reason I do is because it strikes me as very similar to our legislative participation in NCSL. When we have a voice in an organization that can then help us put our voice forward at the federal level, I find that to be valuable, and I think that we should have a voice somehow and be in the know about what's going on at the federal level as far as changes to environmental regulations and all of that kind of stuff. We should know what's going on and have that voice, and I hope that we can stay abreast of that, and that we can think about having updates given to interim committees, EQC, for instance, on what's been happening through this interstate compact. So I would, you know, put that to the folks that participate on EQC to ask for information about what is happening so that we as a legislature can stay on top of that as well. Mr. Chair.
And I concur wholeheartedly. That's one of the work items that I've been trying to kind of pencil out is how to include that on a quarterly basis or even halfway through. But yeah, I think you're right. And we don't want to leave out the other ALEX and CG or CSG. I think they're all good organizations, and I think your vein is correct. You're going down the right path. So, having said that, question's been called. Let's do a voice vote. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any nays? Do I have any proxies?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Knutson and Vinton vote aye by proxy.
And Representative Weatherwax votes aye by proxy.
Okay, and it's unanimous, so this closes EA on SB 55, and it moves to the floor. Air, you want to carry 49? Okay. And then who did we have for 55?
Oh, that'd be myself, Mr.
Okay,
Chair.
So show Representative Gist. Okay. And so let's open EA on SB 215.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I move that Senate Bill 215 do be concurred in. This is a revision of DEQ rule arm 1736-328 to require connection from proposed subdivision.
Okay, is there any discussion? Seeing none.
Mr. Chair, I'm just going to say I'm going to vote no on this just because I feel like there's another story here that hasn't really come out in the hearing and maybe a good story, but it may not be such a good story, and I'd just like more information on this bill than we received. So with that, I'll be a no.
Okay, any other discussion? Representative Malone?
Oh, I just... It's going to be interesting how the ARM comes out. I'm going to be unhappy if 2 does not have the appropriate water rights exist for this connection in it. just my comment.
And Representative Marler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to vote yes on this. I think it's important in this day and age to have new development connected to sewer as much as possible. I do feel like there was a little something going on in the background, but without any more information in front of us in the public, it sounds like a good policy. And we heard some of our conservation partners come in and say that they felt it had been improved since the Senate. So that's why I am voting yes.
And Representative Konauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I have the same concerns as Representative Malone, which is why I put on the official record that essential concern that though that criteria continues to need to be met in order for this to go forward. So I hope that we all at this table understand what our legislative intent was in passing this bill, because if questions ever come up, I want to make sure it's on the record.
And I fully concur. I think we always should put that legislative intent on the record. And I feel that that 500 feet in the original arm was an arbitrary number. I think 1,000 is probably a more appropriate number to give us a little more leeway. Any other discussion? Seeing none, let's ask the question.
Question.
Question's been called. Do a voice vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any nays?
Nay.
Excuse me. Okay, and show that Representative France was the lone nay out there. And proxies?
Weather Wax is aye by proxy.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Vinton and Knutson are aye by proxy.
Okay. And so that closes the EA on SB 215, and it'll move to the floor.
Who is going to carry that?
Carry that one.
Which one did I agree to?
All of them. Oh.
SB 49.
49.
Yes. Kate, so do you have any takers? Kate, Representative Hinkle said he would take SB 215. Okay, so is there anything else for the good of the order? Pardon? Okay, if there's nothing else, let's adjourn for the evening. Remember that there's no meeting on Wednesday. We're going to be on the House floor with HB 2. We will be meeting Monday and Friday.